Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
I'm holding in my hands a small box of chocolate bunnies. An intriguing quote from an intriguing series back in 1990. I didn't even mention the connection with respect to the Diane revelation of Dale Cooper, a man who in many ways foreshadowed another FBI agent, arguably David Duchovny in The X-Files. But let's find out, first and foremost, what the Resonance Rewind team this week make of the first episode of Twin Peaks. Let's go straight to Jessica Burtis in North Carolina. Jessica, I just feel that in many ways, Douglas firs, they should be growing in North Carolina as well as just south of the Canadian border. But Jessica, what did you make of Twin Peaks episode one?
So this is the second time I've seen this. The first time was actually a few years ago when all of our classes at college got canceled because it was snowing so much, and we ordered a pizza and we watched Twin Peaks. So it was nostalgic watching it a little bit because the gloomy weather and the trees and everything reminded me a little bit of that day when we first watched it with my friends. But I think it's such an interesting show. Like, I think Dale Cooper is such an interesting character, and I think that the way that we follow him is very classic in a lot of murder investigation shows. But there's so many different characters in this, all have such very different storylines that it really does make me want to stick with it because I've never actually continued watching the show. But I feel like it's also such a big thing in pop culture. I feel like a lot of people reference this show, so it makes me want to understand more about it. And the mystery does pull you in pretty fast. So I think it's a good show, but it does make me want to watch more.
Well, that is, of course, the heart of Resonance Rewinds, that we can go back in this particular case 34 years, 34 years when I was actually sort of just in my early days of teaching and so on. And this kind of got me through Tuesday nights on BBC television, BBC Two, I think, when they said this very cultish series was emerging from the United States. And clearly, the fact that it was directed by David Lynch was a must see from my own point of view. Jared Palmer, as another younger member of the whole thing who wasn't born when Twin Peaks emerged on our cultural consciousness, what did you make of this particular show?
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting actually, because I've never seen this show before, and I think from seeing a lot of the FBIs, and I think for me watching Supernatural at the moment, I do see a lot of the references that they make to this show. And I also did think that the character of Dale Cooper was very interesting, because he wasn't like this very strict or the very comedic guy. He w had his moments of he could be funny and then he could be like really serious. So I kind of found that quite offbeat humor really worked well with the show. And also I did think the surrealism of it worked very well. And I did, for me, I will say this a bit early, but I did find it funny when him and the rest of the police officers are surrounded by the donuts and then seeing all the flavors. I was like, that's police heaven. So, yeah, I ultimately did enjoy the episode.
Yeah, I just want to clarify for the benefit of the listener that Jared Palmer, no relation to Laura Palmer or indeed the Palmer family portrayed in Twin Peaks, unless you kept something for us, away from us all these years, Jared. No. Okay, let's move to Pamela Sue Mann. Pamela, the music, I suspect, might have had an influence on yourself in terms of Angelo Badalamenti's wonderful theme and evocative tunes that work through from your base in New York. Any thoughts on Twin Peaks? When was the last time you watched it, or were you a first timer to Twin Peaks?
I was a person who liked Twin Peaks by association. In other words, I never really watched it, but I liked it. You know, it was one of those situations. Going back, going forward. I mean, and so I think I peeked in and out, no pun intended, back in the day. But what made me go, oh yeah, when I was watching, and the way I was watching, mind you, it was filled with commercials, so it was quite annoying, and I had to skip forward a lot, so I think I missed a fair bit, in all honesty. But the use of the music and the delivery of everybody's lines, it was hugely stylistic in that sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, but very ironic, serious oddball way, which, David Lynch, like, he's the god, you know what I mean? The use of the music was almost to the point of spaghetti western, it's just, and it had that sort of Italian kind of flair, if you will. But that really sort of carried along the story, and the way it was delivered and the way it was sort of handed out, patiently sort of handed out piece by piece. And especially Kyle MacLachlan is the perfect actor for that. So I want to say it's incredible. To me, it's incredible as a whole. You know what I'm saying? As like a whole, you put everything together and it's this particular odd world that is only, it's very Lynchian. And I'm sure college courses are being taught simply on David Lynch at this point. Love it, love it, love it.
The question Sheriff Harry S. Truman puts to Dale Cooper, "Why are you whittling?" The response, "Because that's what you do in a town where a yellow light still means slow down, not speed up." The first two words, of course, uttered in Twin Peaks, Pete Martell's Gone Fishing, not Bing Crosby's. Let's turn to Phil Leerdis. Phil, I'll frankly admit that I bought Dale Cooper's cassette of his diaries. I used to play that regularly in the car. There are all sorts of other areas within this. This is a series which, for me, again, certainly appreciated the weirdness of David Lynch and also the tremendous performances that we see. I seem to recall at the time it was Russ Tamlin's Dr. Jacoby who were many people's favorite character. I always preferred Audrey to be honest. But then the Norwegians are leaving. Where are you going to go, Phil? What are your thoughts?
Well, the Norwegian descendant is here right now. Look, it is fascinating to be talking about this on a show called Resonance Rewind because this is in no small part, a show and an experience that is about how do you rewind? How do you retcon? How do you travel time to change the resonance of things? And so we're seeing this now after Twin Peaks: The Return, which is such a monumental work, one of the all-time great works of art in any field, so great that a television series got voted the best theatrical movie of the decade by critics and historians and filmmakers around the world. And so we're looking at this pilot now through the prism of, as you said, 34 years, but also the complete arc of the Twin Peaks universe. And we realize, much like so many of David Lynch's works, from Dune, even I believe Elephant Man, certainly Lost Highway, but so many of his works deal overtly with time travel, and textually and thematically about how we can retcon our own past through the building of personal narrative. Two things really stood out, therefore, for me in going back to the pilot. One is how much they knew what they were doing. There became this belief in season two after Lynch left because of network shenanigans that they'd lost the plot a bit, to use a phrase. And indeed, they knew from the very beginning where they were going with this. And all you need to do is really hold up the pilot to the very penultimate episode in 2017 and realize they always knew. They always knew where this was heading. It is so, it's like quantum particles that are entangled. The other element that really stood out speaks to this idea of the odd delivery and the irony and the performances that seemed so, I don't know, arch seems maybe a negative word, but so heightened, the emotions of it. Deputy Andy crying, Sarah Palmer's reaction. Everything almost elicited laughs back then, as if it was somehow a commentary on pain and suffering. 34 years later, honestly, I am so moved by these performances because the pain seems genuine and earnest. It's honest. By episode two of this series, they would introduce a thematic device where the characters would frequently watch a soap opera. And it was Lynch's way of announcing that this show I'm making is not ironic. It is not detached. What it's showing is that if you expect people to emote in real life the way you are used to them doing in movies and TV shows, the lack of humanity lies within you. You are the one who is detached. Earnest, emotional, heartfelt expression has no rules, and it's messy, and sadly, sometimes we laugh at it.
Thank you.
There was actually a personal resonance rewind for me in many ways, or a resonance, shall we say, because this actually, when it was released in 1990, symmetrically came 4 years after my father had died and 4 years before my mother had died. And I had similar visceral reactions in both cases. So again, I could certainly identify with the characters that, yeah, on the one hand, I could see the notion that it could be seen as a huge send-up, but on the other hand, actually, when you felt those kind of emotions through the loss of, in this particular case, parents, you do tend to feel, yeah, there's a connection that's actually there. The other thing which I thought was quite interesting, and I think there's probably only Pamela, Phil, and myself, probably not Pamela even, who can remember a series called Peyton Place, which in so many ways, that kind of small town soap opera, which again echoed with respect to this, I think had certain elements that came across that. Anyway, Jessica, what about your moments of the program? I mean, from there's so many, obviously. I mean, Jared's already put a nod in for the direction of the donut scene. We've got Sheriff Andy, of course. We've got Joan Chen as the mill owner, and of course Dr. Chakoby. A whole heap of others. Any things that spring to mind?
I mean, the three scenes that I had remembered originally that had stuck with me were Dale driving down the street with the trees all behind him with his tape recorder, and then the scene of Laura Palmer in the video where you see her face and it zooms in and it's very eerie. And then, like Phil was saying, the moment when the deputy was just sobbing, and that those really stuck with me as moments. From it. And I think those actually are still the moments that I think stand out to me the most, because I think that that first introduction of Dale with like the or the road, just seeing that scene, there's just something very foreboding and ominous about the setting. And I feel like it also kind of sometimes rainy days can tend to be a little cozy and like times when you stay in, but the whole idea that he's going out to investigate this murder kind of counteracts that. And then I think the use of the video, I think, is just really interesting to see from when it was made, the way that it focuses on Laura and the types of film that's used in this show. And then just seeing the deputy crying, because I feel like we don't tend to see that very often in crime investigation shows. I think I'm used to shows like Bones, where they're kind of like, oh yeah, they died this way. That sucks. And they I don't know, there's no like human attachment within them.
Well,
So.
if I can jump in there, Alex made the reference to the X-Files, and David Duchovny spoke about this, about the challenge of doing shows like that, where something horrible happens each week, something terrifying happens each week. If you play it for the emotional horror, if you play it for the emotional fear, for the emotional pain, as an actor, you back yourself into a box really quickly because next week's show might offer something even more horrifying or terrifying or scary or emotional. Now, do you have to be even more over the top in your emotional expression? You quickly become William Shatner if you do that. God, and we all love William Shatner. But you have to be an actor like Shatner who's blessed with no short-term memory. Otherwise, you feel constricted. And so that's the reason that on all these shows, on all these procedurals, you find that kind of more restrained approach, and maybe why in real life, police officers and agents don't show that kind of human empathy and reaction so much because they've got to make it from day to day, knowing tomorrow might bring something even worse. And in Twin Peaks, this fictional town, no, they get up each morning expecting what's going to be best. They expect the police officer, the law enforcement heaven of the donuts.
We need to mention, of course, that the co-creator of this was Mark Frost. Do you feel that sometimes Phil Mark Frost's is eclipsed by David Lynch, or do you feel actually this was very much a co-creation in the same way that Chilpack Hollywood Hour is a co-creation of yourself and Dean Haglund?
Wow. There's yes ands throughout all of that. So I guess by that definition, I am Mark Frost and Dean is David Lynch, even though he can't stand David Lynch. And I love David Lynch. Look, I think Mark Frost understood how to work with and collaborate with David Lynch. I think that's, but the truth is, when you combine Mark Frost and David Lynch, and it's a brilliant teaming, you get David Lynch. That's what makes it work so well. You get the best of David Lynch. He did, of course, have a great experience in showrunning, and that was necessary because that was the sort of job that Lynch himself had no desire to. But man, the work they do in Twin Peaks: The Return, and even on the books that are part of canon and are so important for understanding and the retconning and the time travel of Twin Peaks is it's all Mark Frost. But again, it's clear that the two men understand each other very, very well.
In terms of linear British television history, this came after Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd in Moonlighting, and then preceded, as we mentioned, The X-Files, which I think is quite intriguing in all sorts of ways. Pamela, what about your favourite moments? Did you have any in between the commercial breaks?
The donuts, because it was all beautifully orderly and such a an artistic statement that I won't try to analyze because I'm not an intellectual. But I loved the donut moment. Don't even ask me why. Don't ask me why, because I
A
probably start
foreshadowing of cake, perhaps.
had something to do with control.
Yeah, interesting. And Jared, are you sticking with the donuts, or have you got other aspects which you'd say, well, what about when Bobby's actually in school? What about the school situation? What about the school announcer, the headmaster making the announcement and giving the children the time off, or the students the time off from school?
No, I said the donuts are still my favorite part, but that was played very well by the actors, and I did really like the way that they showed how it actually just, rather than like using dialogue to like overexpose it, they did it gradually, and you could tell that something was off even before the police officer had said something. So I thought that was done pretty well. But overall, the donut, you can't beat it.
I have to say that the opening credits, opening up with the little bird and the move towards the mill and the way in which the mill grinds is exquisitely done. But Phil, what about your favorite moments from this particular episode?
The humor in the show is wonderful, and so often it coming from again Lynch's partnership with Kyle MacLachlan, Kyle MacLachlan as his alter ego almost. I love when we see the one-armed man in the elevator. One-armed man leaves. He will become an important figure in the show, and as he wipes frame, you see Dr. Jacoby for the first time. And Dr. Jacoby, desperate to go with them, can I come with you to the morgue to see my dead, naked patient? Can I come with you to the morgue? And Cooper's reaction, no, why would you want to? Is a wonderful reaction. Another great moment, the in the morgue. Now we've returned to the morgue. We've been there before, but now the lights are flickering on and off. There's a problem with the fluorescence, an unscripted line thrown to that supporting player who apologizes for the lights. In reality, it was Lynch who just thought the scene needed something, and he was literally standing by the door while filming it, turning the lights on and off. But within that, which would become so iconic, the turning on and off of electricity, there is an exchange where Cooper says to the attendant, "Would you leave us alone, please?" And the man corrects him as if he thinks Cooper just called him by the name, "Please," and says, "No, Jim." And then Cooper says, "Would you leave us alone, Jim?" So odd, so wonderful. But the oddest of all are the meta moments in this script. For people who don't know, scripts really have just two things. They have dialogue, and then they have what we call the single space stuff, which is the description that sets the stage, lets you know what the action is going to be. In no other work that I can remember does the dialogue simply repeat the single spaced description. For example, in the script, it says Sheriff Truman and Agent Cooper walk down the hall. Agent Cooper stops Sheriff Truman for a second in the hall. And what does Cooper say? I'm going to stop you for a second here in the hall. And this happens again and again in the script. These antlers, this deer head with antlers, this trophy has fallen on the table. They come in and ask, oh, what happened? Oh, it fell. It's just astonishing. And again, it happens so many times that it's clear that David Lynch and Mark Frost want us asking questions about the artifice. And again, tying it into where they knew they were going, they end up making an impact of how artifice through television and storytelling has entered into the real life of so many of us.
And of course, the one-armed man carries with it connotations of the fugitive from back in the 1960s and the long-running challenge of the hunt
who's
for the one-armed man.
Who's the lady with the log?
The
She's
log
the
lady.
Log lady. Yeah.
Said one day.
Okay, let's talk characters then. Jared, your favorite character or indeed portrayal? Who are you going to go for? There's such a vast panoply to choose from.
I'd have to say Dale Cooper because I kind of like how he comes in and he's kind of very confident and he feels like he's in control. But there's also a mystery about his character, like when he's investigating the body and then he starts to like, of course, put his one of his instruments into the finger. I was thinking, what's he doing? And then like, so this is the previous case, of course, that has a similar sort of like results, and he's looking at it, so it might be the same person. So there is a mystery to him, which I think I have to watch the rest of the series to find out a little bit more. But I think I'm glad that David Lynch didn't just like say no or like didn't cast someone else. I think he gave Carl another chance to be to show what he can do, and it just paid off really. So
26 minutes into the series or the episode before we see Dale Cooper. And I think initially we think, oh, yes, a typical leading man going to sort things out in the same way as Jack Lord would do with McGarrett and Hawaii Five-O and so on and other episodes. But we do see the quirkiness that obviously came out of detectives, subsequently detectives like Monk, previously detectives like Columbo and so on, that other genre playing around with the notion of how he's going and obviously representing the FBI. Pamela, your favorite character or characters or honorable mentions?
I feel like I'm just copying Jared here, but I'm not. I echo his sentiments. My own brain believes this. Dale Cooper, definitely comical. He's just, but I love Tim and Dune, and he's just such a. You know, some people you look at them and you watch them, and no matter what they're doing, you just grin. Like he just makes me grin, and I. This sounds really very obnoxious, but I went to a party in the summer and I saw him. He dresses very preppy, but I saw him and I never really think we had an exchange of a few words because I think we both had children that were running around. But he just made me grin. The same thing, just his very presence. It almost doesn't matter what role he's playing or what he's doing. He's a person. I don't know if anyone feels this way. Like, he makes me grin.
That's sufficient justification. Jessica, what about your good self? Any other lines? I mean, again, just throwing in a few possibilities. Peggy Lipton, of course, known in, as I mentioned last week, in the Mod Squad for a portrayal in this particular case of Norma Jennings, I thought was very competent. About Dana Ashbrook, of course, Bobby Briggs. Any sort of lines that come across from yourself, or is it a case of no, I'm going to go for Dale Cooper?
Well, okay, I do really like Dale Cooper. I mean, he's just so quirky and he's so interesting. He's just not like any other criminal investigator in any show I've ever seen. But I also like the deputy. I mean, I feel like I don't know enough about all the characters because there's so many different plots going on. So I feel like I don't know anybody and everybody is suspect. But I think also the deputy from that like show of emotion, it made me empathize with this guy who I don't know him yet, but yeah, I think Dale Cooper is really the only character that I feel like we know. But if he is the only character that I feel like I know a ton, then I like that it's him because he's great.
And I
Well,
don't
then
think. I would say that when you say everyone suspect, you're not carrying that phrase far enough if you are giving Dale Cooper a pass. That was what stunned me watching it this time, was how sadistic that character was. The sadism of Dale Cooper that is on display in that episode was terrifying to me. But again, I have the benefit of knowing who the character is in his very soul.
it's an omniscient view, Phil, an omniscient view.
And well, but it's hard now to look back and separate character from character arc. Andy was painted with such a brush, was he not, for the way that he responded, and almost treated like comic relief. Andy reveals himself to be, in many ways, the strongest person on, character in the show. I don't mean strong as in interesting. I mean literally that person we would say, wow, he is so strong. And it's an important point because why we laughed at him was his emotional vulnerability. And yet, Isn't it fascinating that the emotionally vulnerable turns out to be the person who's actually the strongest and the most decent in the long run? So it's fascinating. Two other characters that you just can't take your eyes off, really, though at the time, I sort of was annoyed by them when I first saw it. But Sarah Palmer, Laura's mother, I was annoyed at the time because, again, the messiness of the emotion set me off. Now I realize that that anguish she's showing is not the love of a mother for a daughter. It's of plans going awry. And it's frustration and powerlessness. It's dark. Bobby Briggs, another character that bothered me no end. He was just so annoying. You just wanted to take the guy and smack him around a little bit. If we weren't, enlightened enough to know that that's not, we don't do that. We spare the rod. But Bobby's arc, it should actually, now going back and seeing that, it should come as no surprise to realize that that's one of the real heroes of the piece.
And you haven't mentioned, of course, the sheriff's secretary, the maker of the donuts.
I won't, not the maker, the procurer of the donuts, but I will say, Hawk, Deputy Hawk, he doesn't get much to do in this pilot episode, but he's the coolest person who probably has ever walked into our living rooms on television. And he gets to be even cooler as the show goes on. And as we talk about how we're grateful that after the box office failure of the original Dune, how great it was that David Lynch continued to want to give Kyle MacLachlan an opportunity, so therefore Blue Velvet and therefore Twin Peaks. How about Michael Horse? Michael Horse was someone who started at the top of the business and quickly worked his way to the bottom. And this, I don't even think it was his last chance. I think he had given up on any more chances when he got cast in this. And thank goodness, because he's just such a wonderfully entertaining screen presence.
Yeah, I think I'll go for Peggy Lipton as Norma Jennings because I think she produced something which again had a nice sort of warmth about it. Maybe it's the Peyton Place person in me that sort of connected with that one. And of course Julie Cruise, the singer of Falling, which we're going to hear at the end, really. She also appears in a wonderful sort of evocative, dreamlike scenario.
Well, she's very much, in some ways, the voice of the entire Twin Peaks universe, I think we can say. If the music by Angelo Badalamenti is critical to the success of all of Lynch's work, but to Twin Peaks in particular, then Julie Cruise is sort of the third part of that triangle. Lynch's worlds are very much about seeing what you hear. And therefore, Badalamenti and Julie Cruise deserve no end of thanks for their contributions.
Pamela Suman, what is your score for episode one, also known as, I believe, of Northwest Passage, of course, a nod to the direction of Lewis and Clark and so on, and the foundations of America and such like. What are you going to go for out of 10?
11.
Wow.
11 because what is very rare in art, in all art forms, is a uniqueness of vision, a uniqueness of delivery, where the audience, whether they know anything about the art form or not, the audience is wowed because they haven't seen something that they understand. They haven't seen something that they could very quickly, which so many of us do now, put things into a box, and it can go into that box very well. This, David Lynch doesn't fit into a box. People can be influenced by him and try and make all kinds of art as an homage to him, but it's not David Lynch. And the uniqueness of it gives it that one extra point that it is something unique unto itself that nobody could exactly recreate. They just couldn't.
Well, this is boding very well for the first postponed due to unforeseen circumstances, celebrating New Year's, I believe, but soon to be rearranged March summit meeting of Pamela Suman and Phil Lynas in New York that I've heard is in the pipeline. So that could be very exciting. Phil, do you want to say something?
The rumors are always true. You know that in show business. I always want to say something, but is it my turn to vote on this or not?
Oh, you've got the microphone, so yeah.
We'll go to Jared.
Jared,
what's your score?
I'd give this episode an 8. I really enjoyed the cinematography, the offbeat humor, and the surrealism of it really showed well. And I did really like the way they set up, even though it did take a while for Dale to be introduced. I think they did it very well. And I look forward to watching more episodes of this series and even the revival that came out in 2017.
Very critical to watch Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, which is referenced, that phrase in the pilot. And that is nothing less, featuring a performance by David Bowie for the ages. That is nothing less than the code for deciphering the world of Twin Peaks. Understanding is a different phrase altogether, because this is a show that's all about questions, and good questions begetting more questions, not answers. Mysteries are insoluble. They are for exploring. Hopefully, crimes get solved. And indeed, in Twin Peaks, crimes get solved, but mysteries do not. They get explored. And I love that when Pete Martell first calls in and tells the sheriff she's dead, wrapped in plastic. After a pregnant pause, the sheriff asks the question we all know he's going to ask, where? What? He's not asking who? What in the world? Pete just said she's dead, as if he knew who it was. And the question is where? This is a show that constantly asks the questions you're not expecting it to ask, and therefore leads you down all of these mazes so delightfully. I gave it a 10 then. Not only do I give it a 10 now, but I go back in time to Jared's answer and I change his to a 10, and I reduce the scale from 1 to 5. So we've both now, Jared and I, given it a 10 on a scale of 5.
So Jessica Burtis, given that cosmological bit of super string theory that was demonstrated by Phil, where are you going to go for your score?
I think for my score, I would also agree with Jared and give it an 8. But I'm assuming Phil Ernest jumped back in time and changed that to a 10. So I don't know. I guess maybe it's a 10 now. I don't know. But I think it's a very interesting show. I don't tend to watch crime investigations, so I think my score is partly impacted because it's not my genre. But I think it's a very interesting show. And I will try to actually keep watching it this time because I want to finally understand all the references that people make to it.
Phil, any closing thoughts before I reveal next week's Residence Rewind?
Just that I, in my mind, the tale of Twin Peaks, the world of Twin Peaks, now squarely set in the world in which we live. I'll say no more, but I hope that story, it will continue, because it continues in my mind. And I hear words from Lynch all the time that he hears whisperings, that he's being called out to. So we'll see. We'll see if it continues, but I sure hope that it does.
And we never even mentioned the damn good cherry pie, which is an essential part of the whole series.
I thought the Siren FM license didn't allow us to use words like that.
Well,
I thought we would have to say damn good cherry dessert.
There you go. Next week on Residence Rewind, we will be going into the world of Spy-Fi, and we return to spoof Spy-Fi in many ways with a series which proved to be extraordinarily popular and featured an actor, Zachary Levi, who would become Shazam. In this particular instance, though, he's playing Chuck. Chuck, the opening episode of a whole new fun scenario. Next up on Residence Rewind. For now, to Jared Palmer, to Pamela Suman, to Phil Leonis, and to Jessica Burtis, keep on resonating.